ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
नरं चैव नरोत्तमं
नरं चैव नरोत्तमं
देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम्
भागवत
भागवतीम श्लोके
भगवती उत्तम श्लोके
भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिके
भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिके।
For sign of Srimad Bhagavatam, which are very means of conquest, let us offer respectful obeisance to the personality of God Narayana, to Narayana, and Rishi Srimad Bhagavatam. On the Mother Saraswati, the Goddess of Learning, and to Sri Vyasadeva, the author, who regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto pure devotees, all this troublesome and the applicants practice toward almost nil. Transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, whose praise of transcendental hymns comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 26, a description of the hellish planets. 26th chapter describes how a simple man goes to different hells, where he is punished in various ways by the assistance of Yamaraj, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Prakriti Kriya Manani Guna Karmani Sarvasha Ahankara Vimura Atma Katahamita Manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. The foolish person thinks he is independent of any law. He thinks there is no God or regulated principle and that he can do whatever he likes. Thus he engages in different sinful activities. And as a result, he is put into different hellish conditions of life. He is put into different hellish conditions life after life to be punished by the laws of nature. The basic principle of his suffering is that he foolishly thinks himself independent. Although he is strictly under the control of the laws of material nature, these laws act due to the influence of the three modes of nature, and therefore each human being also works under three different types of influence. Accordingly, according to how he acts, he suffers different reactions in the next life or in this life. Religious persons act differently from atheists, and therefore they suffer different reactions. So here is a description of the hellish planets. Just like there are many heavenly planets, there are also many hellish planets. Because everybody wants to go to the heaven, isn't it? Nobody wants to go to hell. So therefore, generally, these descriptions are not read by everyone. Most people, they want to read about Vaikuntha, going to Goloka, enjoying with Krishna, enjoying in the gardens of Vaikuntha, enjoying all the opulences of the spiritual arrangement or a material arrangement. Whether it's a material arrangement or a spiritual arrangement, the main thing is that one achieves a better life, isn't it? Whether you get a better life in this world or a better life in the next world, or whether you get a better life tomorrow or whatever, it must become better. Life must become better. So this idea of a better life is generally dealt with in all religions. The idea of going to heaven, the idea of achieving a better result. So generally, as Prabhupada says here, the bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. So generally the soul thinks he's the doer, On account of this thinking he's the doer, he therefore has a natural attachment to the result. The attachment to the result is naturally dependent on how much one thinks he's the doer. You see? The more you think you're the doer, the more you're attached to the result. It's a natural phenomenon. Just like if I think I'm doing something, which is natural, we all think we're doing something, therefore we think that the result is very important. Otherwise we wouldn't be doing the thing. So every single activity is influenced or dictated by a certain result. Therefore we have this law of cause and effect. Everything is a huge interaction of cause and effect. Now the interaction of cause and effect, generally people study the effect, but they don't understand the cause. You see, just like as a businessman, you want the result, but you don't necessarily want to spend your whole life trying to find out how to get it, isn't it? You don't want to go, most people don't want to spend 10 years in university just to become rich. So therefore, what we want to do is we want the result. But in order to get the result, we need to know what is the actual cause of the result. And therefore, this principle of cause and effect is the underlying principle of philosophy, whether it's scientific philosophy, whether it's spiritual philosophy or any philosophy, materialistic philosophy. It's all based upon understanding how nature works. Science is simply a study of nature, and therefore the Bhagavad is giving a very deep insight as to how nature works, because it's saying here prakriti kriyamanani. Kriya means how things work. Kriya. Kriya is the, if you like, functioning energy of God, how things function. So according to that particular verse, things function under the laws of nature. Nature has laws. And those laws are to be studied. For instance, Prabhupada always gives the example, birth, old age, disease, and death. So everyone used to get fed up with hearing all the time, birth, old age, disease, and death. Why is Prabhupada continually talking about birth, old age, disease, and death? Because birth is a suffering. Old age is a suffering, disease is a suffering, and death is the ultimate suffering. There's no greater suffering than death, because everyone is scared of death, isn't it? So, therefore, logically, one can understand that nature itself is, if you like, a negative energy. The emphasis on negativity by Srila Prabhupada and many other great philosophers sometimes is criticized by people. Why is this person going on about the negative things in life? What about the positive things like having a nice family, having a lot of joy, having a lot of money, having a good time? These are also there. So why is it that the Bhagavatam, which is full of wonderful descriptions about the personality of Godhead, why is it also now describing the hellish planets? You see? Why is it describing the hellish planets? The reason is because one has to understand how the guna karmani sarvasha, gunai karmani sarvasha, that the gunas, guna prakriti, nature, works in three different ways. What we call the laws of nature are very, very powerful. Mama maya dharatiya. Therefore, we see that the influences of nature are very, very powerful. These influences are experienced on the subtle and gross workings of the body. For instance, our mind is sometimes in a mode of goodness, sometimes in the mode of passion, sometimes in the mode of ignorance. According to the condition of our subtle body, our gross body acts. Subtle is the parent of, if you like, our activities, by our influence of our mind. The power of the mind is very, very strong. When our mind is in a mode of goodness, we may think so many wonderful things. We may think of helping people, opening hospitals, opening schools, helping the blind, helping the lame, giving free medicine, giving free food, bringing children up in a nice way, being nice to our neighbor, giving charity, opening educational institutes, opening hospitals in our name. So you see that in a in society, just like in India, there are many dharmshalas, schools, hospitals opened by people who you would say are leading citizens, or they're examples of good citizens. A good person will be encouraged to do many good things, nice things, help people. Generally, you find that the nature of goodness is that it is illuminating. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it illuminates. That illumination of goodness allows one to, if you like, increase the phenomena of goodness is that the more you do good, the more you get good results. So, as it says in the Vedas, that by activities of goodness you can go up to Svarga, you can go up to the heavenly planets. And when your good activities become exhausted, when you use up all your good activities, again your poverty is seen, again you return back down. So generally speaking, by performing many, many good activities, one gets good results. One may go to heaven, one may have a beautiful body, good education, good culture, one may live a very happy life. Generally, Prabhupada says that goodness conditions one to happiness. Those who are in goodness, they become happy. So naturally, you find people who are happy, they're not so disturbed. People who are very good, like many people say, I lived a very good life, I didn't do any harm, I didn't lie, I didn't cheat, I didn't do anything wrong to anyone, so I have no need to worry. People generally who are in goodness, they don't worry much. Now, generally we find that goodness allows you to enjoy. Actually, goodness, Prabhupada said one time, he said, goodness is just as binding as the other modes. It's not that people think that if you become good that you're becoming free from the modes. You're not. The goodness actually is also the trap of Maya. And therefore, many people who are good, they're not actually very religious. You'll find that actually religion is very weak amongst many people within society who are very good. Because a lot of times they equate goodness with some sort of spirituality. Many times we think that being good is being spiritual. It has nothing to do with the soul whatsoever. Being good or being bad are all activities of material nature. And we should understand that simply by being good does not mean that one is spiritual. There are many people who are very, very good people, but they haven't got a crumb of religion. And there are many people in the past who have done wonderful acts of kindness, and acts of benevolence and altruistic humanitarians who were not at all interested in God. Were not interested in religion or God. So therefore, actually, goodness is very, very dangerous. Because all the modes are very, very dangerous. They're very, very dangerous modes because all of them are actually, if you like, they are the bewildering curtain of Maya. They're the bewildering manifestation of Maya. So therefore, generally, people, when they hear about goodness all the time, it doesn't wake them up. But ignorance is one of the wonderful creations of Krishna, because the experience of ignorance, the experience of the hellish planets, the experience of, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, sukha dukkha da, dukkha, that this dukkha, experience of misery, actually in many ways is the fundamental principle of people turning towards God. You see, when the material world becomes hellish, then in actuality people become sometimes, anyway, a little bit introverted, or they become actually interested in finding out why. Many people say, why did my child die? Why did God do this to me? Why did I end up in the situation? Just like when people become crippled, they become very philosophical. When their body is finished, their body is crippled, they start thinking. Now what they usually do is they blame God. A lot of times they blame God. If God is so good, how could He do this to me? Now when people become very beautiful and rich and famous and wealthy, they never blame God. Have you noticed that? People never blame God for becoming rich. You never see people coming home and saying, oh, God did it again. He gave me another million today. What is he doing to me? Again, I'm another million today. And tomorrow I'm going to get another million. And I've got another big house to buy and another beautiful car. And I've got so much now. And will he stop this? When will he stop doing this to me? When will he stop giving me things? No, nobody complains. You'll find that as soon as anyone gets anything, it's immediately, I did such a good business deal today. I was so clever. I was so fantastic that everyone was in awe of my skills, my ability, my mastership, my huge resources. So we generally find that people are very reluctant to give God any credit, but they're very quick to give God blame. As soon as things go wrong, it's God. It's always God. He's the first one you go after. Right? He's the first criminal to look for. Why did God do this? What in God's name is this? So we generally find, especially when things go wrong, people go, oh my God, or whatever. They all have this consciousness of God. Therefore, it's very, very difficult for people to accept this description of the hellish planets. Because people know that hell exists. Just like when on television one time, a reporter, he asked Prabhupada, he said, does your religion believe in hell? And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, this London is hell. He said, is it not hell? It's always cold, you never see the sun. It's like hell. So Prabhupada said that this country, England, was like hell. And even in the front page of the newspaper the next day, they had, Swami says London is hell, on the Evening Standard. So the point is that the material world is hell. It is hell. And in actuality, all of these planets are described by Sukadeva Goswami. They all have different types of misery. And this misery is very vividly described. Most people avoid reading it because it's so ghastly and horrible. So here Sukadeva Goswami describes the following 28 hells. Tamishra, Arhatamishra, Rurava, Maharurava, Kumbhipaka, Kalasutra, Asi, Patravana, Sukramukha, Adakupa, Kami Bhojana, Sandamsha, Taptasurmi, Rajra Kataka Salmali, Vaitarani, Payoda, Pranaroda, Vishishana, Lala Baksha, Sarameyadana, Avichi, Ayapana, Sharakadharma, Rakshogana Bhojana, Shulaputra, Dandasukha, Avata Nirodana, Prayavartana, and Suchimukha. A person who steals another's money. A person who steals another's money, wife, or possessions is put into hell known as Tamishra. A man who tricks someone and enjoys his wife is put into the extremely hellish condition known as Anda Tamishra. A foolish person absorbed in the bodily concept of life, who on the basis of this principle maintains himself or his wife and children by committing violence against other living entities, is put into a hell known as Rurava. There the animals he killed take birth as creatures called Ruras, and cause great suffering for him. Those who kill different animals and birds and then cook them are put by the agents of Yamaraj into the hell known as Kumbhipaka, where they are boiled in oil. A person who kills a Brahmin is one who does not follow scriptural injunctions, but who does everything whimsically or follows some rascal, is put into a hell known as Asipatravana. A government official who poorly administrates justice or who punishes an innocent man is taken by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell known as Sukramukha, where he is mercilessly beaten. God has given advanced consciousness to the human being. Therefore he can feel the suffering and happiness of other living beings. The human being bereft of this consciousness, however, is prone to cause suffering for other living beings. The assistance of Yamaraj puts such a person into the hell known as Andakupa, where he receives proper punishment from his victims. Any person who does not receive or feed a guest properly What he personally enjoys eating is put into the hell known as Karni Bhojana. There is an unlimited number of worms and insects continuously there, an unlimited number of worms and insects continuously bite him. A thief is put into the hell known as Sandamsha. A person who has sexual relationships with a woman who is not to be enjoyed is put into the hell known as Tamtashuri. A person who enjoys sexual relationships with animals is put into the hell known as Vrajra Kantaka Salamali. A person born in an aristocratic or highly placed family, but who does not act accordingly, is put into the hellish trench of blood, pus, and urine called the Vaitarani River. One who lives like an animal is put into the hell called Pyoyuja. A person who mercilessly kills animals in the forest without sanction is put into the hell called Pranaroda. A person who kills animals in the name of religious sacrifice is put into the hell named Vishishana. A person who forces his wife to drink a semen is put into the hell called Lala Baksha. One who sets a fire or administers poison to kill someone is put into the hell known as Sarameyadana. A man who earns his livelihood by bearing false witness is put into the hell known as Avicii. A person addicted to drinking wine is put into the hell named as Ayapana. One who violates etiquette by not showing proper respect to superiors is put into the hell known as Sharakardama. A person who sacrifices human beings to Bhairava is put into the hell called Rakshogana Bhojana. A person who kills pet animals is put into the hell called Shulaputra. A person who gives trouble to others is put into the hell known as Dandashuka. One who imprisons a living entity within a cave is put into the hell known as Avairnirodhana. A person who shows unwarranted wrath towards a guest in his house is put into the hell called as Payavartana. A person maddened by possession of riches and thus deeply absorbed in thinking of how to collect money is put into the hell known as Suchimukha. After describing the hellish planet, Sukadeva Goswami describes how pious persons are elevated to the high planetary systems where the demigods live and how they can come back again to this earth when the results of their pious activities are finished. Finally, he describes the universal form of the Lord and glorifies the Lord's activities. So these are all in relationship to how, in the previous chapter, it was described that my dear king, as I've heard from my spiritual master, I have fully described to you the creation of this material world according to the fruit of activities and desires of the conditioned souls. These conditioned souls who are full of material desires achieve various situations in different planetary systems, and in this way they live within the material creation. So here it's described by Sukadeva Goswami about the different conditions. After all, the material world is just different conditions. The conditions of material life are relative according to our particular desires. Some people, as it says, one man's food is another man's poison. So some people actually like hellish life. Even in the hellish planets, Prabhupada said that the Yamaduta, they enjoy it. They're also enjoying. They enjoy gorging people's eyes out, chopping people up. They enjoy people being boiled in oil. It's actually quite a description if you study it, because what happens is that when you go to the hellish planets, you get trained up. So not only do you suffer, but you can inflict it on others. So their pleasure is inflicting on others. You see, they also get pleasure. The Yamadutas actually get pleasure out of inflicting pain on you. They get pleasure out of putting you through. And sometimes you find this, that actually demonic people, they get great pleasure out of pain. What they call them? Sadists?
Sadomasochists.
They actually is a type of pleasure. So there's also a kind of perverse pleasure in the hellish planets. The Yamadutas, they have been made to suffer. Now they get the pleasure of inflicting suffering on others. So they actually take a great enthusiasm to do that. That's why the Yamadutas are very fearful for people, because they come with great joy to drag you to your punishment. Sometimes when you get taken to the police station, you can see the policeman's enjoying your suffering. Have you noticed that? They actually enjoy it. Sometimes when a Mzungu or Westerner particularly, they like the fact that now this guy is in torment. So this kind of mentality you can study. That just as there is the mentality of enjoying wonderful arrangements in the relative world, there are also great pleasure. Pleasure means perverse. Of course, it's not really pleasure. Nothing in the material world is pleasure. There are different states of misery. And therefore, hellish life or heavenly life, they're all the same. Prabhupada said, just like stool, whether it's, you can't say, this is good stool and this is bad stool. So you can't say anything in the material world is good. There's no such thing as good matter. Because matter intrinsically has inferior qualities. The only thing about matter is the more inferior it becomes, the more you become disgusted with it. You see? You become disgusted. So this has to be studied, because actually Krishna creates the material world out of his kindness. It is actually a creation of kindness. Because in actuality, if you study the, if you like, the psychology of nature, the living entity has chosen to ignore Krishna. He's chosen to come to the material world to enjoy. And generally speaking, most of the material world is about enjoying. Most people here, their business is enjoying. The business is not suffering. So in one sense, if God had only given enjoyment, then the living entity could never get out of the material world. It would never be possible. You see? Because he could never make a choice to get out. Now, if you were completely happy here, which is an impossibility, because without God there's no happiness. There cannot be happiness without God. So the maya of the material world, as the word says, maya, means it appears to be that which is not. It appears to be. So when something appears to be, then this is a different thing from something which exists. You see, the word maya means that which doesn't exist. And in actuality, the material energy, in one sense, doesn't exist. So if it was all so-called pleasure, it wouldn't exist anyway, because pleasure doesn't exist. What you're getting is some temporary experience in the material body. Now, if you're getting a temporary experience, whether it's good or whether it's bad, it's all bad, because it's temporary. You see, you may think it's wonderful to gain, but the experience of gaining is very temporary. You see? So in actuality, you haven't really gained, because it doesn't last. This point has to be studied, that whatever you gain in this world, suppose you look back and how many things have you gained in the last 500 million births? You see? Think about it. I mean, even today, you've gained things, isn't it? Now, you may look back and say, okay, in this lifetime, you write down all the things you've gained. But they're all meaningless, you see? All of them are just as meaningless as all the things you've suffered. Because you've suffered a lot, and you've gained a lot. So in other words, this Krishna's saying that this experience of happiness and stress, they're like the coming and going of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception of sign of prat, and one must learn to tolerate them. So, this is a very important point. Krishna is saying you must learn to tolerate happiness as much as you must learn to tolerate the stress, because both of them are simply the same side of the same coin. Now, generally speaking, that is why goodness is so dangerous, because when you're experiencing goodness, you're actually attracted to more. You want more of it. You see? This is the problem. That is why in Vedic culture, it restricts things. You see, many people can't understand, why does Vedic culture restrict? Why doesn't it just say, hey, these things are good for you, have a nice time? It doesn't, it's not that material, that the Vedas are restricting you in order to curb your enjoyment. No. The reason Vedic rules and regulations are there is so as that one can actually see things in their proper perspective. In other words, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, they are the regulated principles of freedom. The regulated principles of freedom. This is very important. Why are regulating principles freedom? Because the attachment and aversion As it says, Brahma Bhuta Pasanapma Nasochati Nakanchati. Those who are Brahma Bhuta, they're no longer Nasochati nor Nakanchati. Nasochati means they're no longer hankering nor lamenting. They're no longer hankering nor lamenting. So in reality, one has to come to the point of neither hankering nor lamenting. So therefore, that's why, generally speaking, nice activities, good activities, pleasurable activities are dangerous, because they cause hankering. They cause more and more hankering. And that's why sadhus generally live a very simple life. They live a very simple life, not because they're not capable of enjoying. Just like one Prabhupada said, a sadhu is also potent. He can enjoy. It's not that he's impotent, some sort of impotent. He's potent, but he knows the nature of, as we were saying originally, cause and effect. Therefore he knows that this attachment is very, very dangerous in the material world. Because from attachment, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, by contemplating the senses, one develops attachment. You see? The punishment for stealing an apple, maybe you get hit on the wrist. But the punishment for stealing someone's wife, like Saudi Arabia, they cut your head off. You see? So many people say, well, that's a bit extreme. Because, you know, oh, I was in a bar, I met a woman and I had sex with her. What's the harm? No, they say, chop. There's adultery. In other societies, they probably tap you on the back and say, well done. Try again, someone else. So all societies all have these different rules and regulations. But generally, a civilized society, according to the extremity of the crime, the punishment must fit the crime. That's what they say. So material nature is perfect. Material nature works perfectly. There's no imperfections of material nature. Therefore, every single experience that you get is perfectly administered. And there's nothing that anyone can question. You cannot question nature. If you're due to lose your leg, you will lose your leg. And it is a fitting and perfect punishment for it. And once you've lost your leg, you might cry about it and say, well, why did I lose my leg? Why has he got two legs and I've only got one? But that's not the point. The point is that nature rewards and nature punishes perfectly, absolutely perfectly. There's no one defect in nature. So one should never see a defect in nature or in God's creation. And that's why materialists have a big problem, because they don't understand how nature is working by the principle of cause and effect. Therefore, when they see the imperfections of nature, they say there's no God. The principle of most scientists is that if God was there, all this chaos wouldn't be. If God was there, all of these horrible things wouldn't be going on. If God was there, there wouldn't be so much famine and hunger and all these other things. They don't understand that these things are actually there by the perfect plan, by the perfect arrangement of Krishna. And therefore, they should be just as much accepted as the good things. In other words, this is one of the biggest problems in religion, that they always tend to accept God should be goody-goody, but he shouldn't be baddie-baddie. But God is neither good, nor God is bad. God is God. Nature is also perfect. And when it gives a good result, it's perfectly administered. When it gives a bad result, it's perfectly administered. Therefore one should accept it. Therefore Krishna says one should tolerate without being disturbed. Okay. Finish there. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. When you said that you're going to all this hellish planet and you have to suffer, and depending on what bad doings or karma you've done. Now when you give up this body, material body is already given up.
Yeah.
The only thing is there is man, the soul. Now, does the soul suffer as well?
The soul cannot suffer. So, there's no experience of suffering for the soul, as there's no experience of happiness for the soul. The soul neither experiences happiness nor distress. The experiences of the material world have nothing to do with the soul whatsoever.
Yeah, then how does that body... It doesn't have a body, material body anymore.
So what happens is that the body itself is actually made up of, as we say, eight elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. When you give up your gross body, you give up the body made of earth, water, like that, ether. But the subtle body is the real nucleus of the body. The real body is your subtle body, which is mind, intelligence, ego. All your senses are centered around the mind. Your mind manifests different types of bodies. So in actuality, there's no such thing as different types of bodies, there's just different states of mind. You see, what you're seeing in a so-called body is just a different state of mind. So when you are disconnected from gross matter, you're connected with subtle matter. So all of these hellish planets, they're a different experience altogether. And they're described, if you read them, that you can experience all of this on a different plane, on the subtle plane, subtle body. So you're taken through a huge different world, what they call, Bhaktivinoda calls it the signal world, which is like the subtle world. And you're given different types of bodies. First of all, you're trained up to get that body. For instance, if you say you were the king of England and then you had to become a dog, you need training to become a dog. You can't just become a dog, because you might start still trying to be the king of England. So you're taken to a hellish, you call it hellish, but you're taken to a certain training camp and you're trained up. So when you take the dog body, you're already trained up in that consciousness. So similarly, whatever type of body you're going to take in the hellish planets, you get, first of all, you get trained up for that body. You get trained up. So you're taken away by the Yama Dutas, and then you're trained up. So you're actually put through this huge subtle readjustment. You're put through this complete readjustment. So it's like clothes. When you go out and play golf, you wear your golf clothes. No good going out in your pajamas. Someone said, "What's this guy out playing golf in his pajamas?" You go out in your golf clothes. When you go to fly an airplane, you put on your airplane suit. When you go on the water, you put your on the water suit. So all you're doing is putting on your suit. So you go and have a hellish suit. Sometimes you have a heavenly suit. So according to your reward or whatever, you get trained up in these different types of.
Pain is the same as the pain in the material body, in the subtle body.
Well, I'm not sure on that, because Prabhupada said the subtle body is much more intense. But I don't, you know, in other words, what you experience through the gross and what you experience through the subtle is actually quite different. But how, I don't know how it all happens.
So it's not like someone who is born on a material planet like the Earth, like born from a womb of a mother, from a childhood to a middle age and the old age. When you give up this body, you take a subtle body. Do you go through the same?
You've always got a subtle body, but what it is, there's a subtle world. You see, we're only acquainted with the gross world. So therefore, we see everything as gross. You know, we say, well, if you got a body, it must be skin and bone. But there are billions and billions of different types of bodies. So there are also different types of arrangements in nature. Just like the nearest thing could be a ghost body. Now, for people who see, they don't see a ghost as a body. They say a ghost is a ghost. But you never say he's got a ghost body, because they see it as not having a body. But it is a body. But it's just a different type of body. So what the ghost experiences may be completely different from your experience. But it is an experience. It's as much real as your experience. So the experiences of the hellish planets are also very real. But they're done through a different medium of energy. But there are physical. These planets are all physical. They're described here. All these different planets. They do exist and they're in the universe. And you do go there. Like Tamisra. It is a planet. Rurava. It's a planet you go to. Now, that planet, if you can example on this planet, suppose you're supposed to have a watery body. Now, we don't have watery bodies, so we don't know what the fishes experience, because in the fish world, there's all sorts of bodies, but they're just a different combination of matter. But they have just as much a real experience as we do on land, but we don't identify with it. We just see fish as fish. So similarly, in hellish planets, they have bodies associated with that atmosphere. And therefore, that's why you can endure. Now, if you went in this body to a planet made of copper, you just sizzle up in a few minutes. But there, you don't. You can endure it for a long, 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 long time. Endure it means you are part of it. You go to a planet where you're in a... There's planets which are... There's planets which are even just all trees. It's all trees. The whole planet's trees. Now, we don't have experience of such a planet, but there is. So you're a tree in a planet of trees.
Oh.
You know, so there's all sorts of
planets. So what about the Yamadutas? The Yamadutas are making others suffer, right?
Mm.
So they're causing pain and suffering by eating, killing, whatever. So won't they get the karma also?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't really answer that in terms of how much karma. But they're servants of Yamaraj. So in a sense, from my understanding of it, was that after you've gone through all of your suffering, then you have to get some more credits. So by becoming a servant of Yamaraj, you actually, this is the way you actually gain some credits. So they're doing their job. How much, you know, and how they do their job. It's like becoming a policeman. In one sense you could say, well, maybe the policeman should be arrested for the way he arrests someone. But he's just, in many ways people say, well, he's just doing his job. How do you arrest people nicely, you know? If a guy's shooting people to death, do you go up to him and say, excuse me, sir, could you come along to the station? You really don't, we don't like what you're doing here. So, the Yamadutas, they're constables. And they're there to do a job. So, the job's not very nice, but they enjoy doing it. It's their service to Yamaraj. What they do, and I guess they must get some benefit because they're serving Yamaraj. I don't know if it's a job I'd want, but still.
I mean, you might have done some karma to get a job in Yamaraj. So what sort of karma you got to be done to get a job?
Yeah, our karma, actually all of us sitting in this room have been through every single description of body. So we've all been there, we've all done it. We've forgotten about it now. And therefore we say, you know, whoa, how could anyone end up like that? We've gone through every single experience in this world. So we've been Yamadutas, we've been on the planet full of insects, and we've swam around in oceans of stool and pus, and we've done all of that. And we've forgotten it. And we'll do it again. You know, if we're not careful, we can again end up doing all those things. Because the material, the duration of existence is billions upon billions and billions and billions, infinite. Prabhupada said, we're here since, what does he say? From time immemorial. Immemorial means beyond any concept of memory. So we've been through it all. So the point is that if you really want to gain from it, then better to hear from Sukadeva Goswami. Because better to hear and act than to again become a victim. For instance, we know that we're victimized, and that's why generally people are serious about spiritual life, because they know they've been a victim. Most people who are caught doing a crime, the first thing they get is this, at least those who are honest, gets this feeling of sort of stupidity. You know, why was I doing such a stupid thing? Sometimes you're doing something, you feel really stupid. So that kind of introspection is the beginning of reformation. That you actually think to yourself, well, you know, what a stupid, you know, someone who ends up in prison suffering, they say, well, what a stupid thing. For that little bit of pleasure, I have to suffer so much. So the idea of the reason these hellish planets are described in such vivid, almost sadistic way is because it's to make us realize that this is the, okay, it's an extreme example, but it's an example of taking shelter in material energy. You see, we don't mind hearing about these things and kind of having a little laugh or even thinking, oh wow, that sounds amazing. But in actuality, they're true, every single detail. So if we knew they were really true, we'd be shaking like a leaf if we thought we were going to end up in that condition. So most people are generally very scared of material energy because they know, deep down in their heart, they know what material energy is capable of. And it's capable of inflicting tremendous amount of pain. It has that unique ability. So these types of descriptions of pain are in every religion. So as to make people aware that, okay, You may get away with it, and you may not end up in hell, but if you become irresponsible, and if you become lax or inattentive, you may end up doing something horrible. Nature is very tricky. A lot of people who didn't think they would end up in hell do actually end up in hell. Because here it says even ignoring a guest and not looking after them, you go to hell. So a lot of people wouldn't think that. But it's a fact. There's even a description by giving someone a nasty look who comes to your house, you can go to hell. So it's very strict. The Manasamhita also, if you read it, it's very strict. Nature is very, very strict. And violators of the laws of nature are punished. You see? They're punished. Just like when you get nice things, it's because you did something nice. So you don't mind that. You think that's fine. That's completely reasonable. And because you did something nice, you should enjoy something nice. No harm in that. But if things go wrong, you just can't accept it. It's not acceptable because it's against your desire. Anything which is opposed to your so-called happiness, you reject it. And anything which is for your happiness, you accept it. So generally people, they don't want to accept. They blankly refuse to accept hellish punishment. They don't accept it. They think it's all just a load of stories. But when you talk about heavenly planets, everyone loves it. Great. In every religion, people love the idea of Svarga and heaven and beautiful things going on. So even the most criminal type people, they go to church. And they like to hear the priest say, yeah, when you die you go to heaven and there's lots of angels there. And da, 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 da. But they don't like when the priest starts ranting on about how you're going to be taken to a planet and put into an ocean of insects and bitten every day and there's no light there and you're constantly being eaten up by different types of bugs and insects. You don't want any of that. So generally what we want to know about is always related with our happiness. And that's why Sukadeva Goswami is going against the grain by explaining what is really going on.
Is there anything like when you say some person died in a peaceful death, somebody was a horrible death, a guy died in a horrible, lot of horrible.
Yeah.
Does death have that first of a moment that it's a happy death or a peaceful death? Or?
Yeah, there's no such thing as a happy death, but generally if you go without too much misery, people see that as a happy, like they say, oh, she died so wonderfully in her sleep. It was such a nice passing away. But you know, there's no happy death because you don't know what the heck's going to happen afterwards. So you know, it's like suppose I shot you up in a rocket into space and I didn't know which planet you're going to land on. And I didn't know what was going to be on that planet. It could be like, you know, all these horrible monsters, you know, going to eat you up. So where is the question of happy? Because you don't know where you're going. The only time one can be a little bit confident is that if you've led a very pious life. Generally you find people who had a very pious life, they don't look so anxious when they come to die. Who knows what happens to them? Only nature. As they say, only God knows what's going to happen to him. A lot of times people say, only God knows what happened to him when he dies. Because it's true, only Krishna knows. But there is no happy situation in the material world. There's just different degrees of misery. You know, what we call good, it just means there's less misery. That's all. It's less misery. Anything which has less misery, we're attracted to as so-called happiness. But happiness just means less misery. That's all. There's no such thing as happiness in the material world. It doesn't exist. Because happiness can only come from Krishna. It can't come from the material energy. It doesn't exist. You know, just like none of us in this room are happy. We're comfortable. We're not happy. Because in actuality, happiness comes from the soul and the soul's relationship with Krishna. So we can say, I'm comfortable. I'm not too uncomfortable. And then someone comes in the room who you really hate. You go, oh no, now everything's spoiled. Look at this character. So these Adi Bhautika, Adi Atmaka, Adi Devaka, they're constantly causing you suffering. So all so-called happiness is avoiding adiatmika, adibhautika, and adidevika. And if you're good at avoiding it, you know, it's like if it's pouring down with hailstones, freezing cold, and you go into a warm room, you think that's happiness. But the room is not happy. There's nothing in the room which is happy. It's like Prabhupada gives the example, if you jump into a freezing cold river in the winter, it's miserable. Now in the hot boiling sun of, let's say, Rajasthan, and you jump into a nice cool river, it's happy. But the river is neither miserable nor happy. You can't say the English river is miserable because it's in the winter, and the Rajasthani river is happy because it's in the summer. It's neither happy nor miserable. It's just that your condition of material condition gives you this false idea of happiness and stress.
Yeah. When this subtle body, when one commits after the 28 defined what you call hellish, then somebody is then our 6 or 7, then he goes through that process. Eventually, does he begin from zero again?
Yeah, the process of going through 8,400,000 species is that, you know, you come to the level where you can't go any lower, and then you start working up again. So there's always increment and decrement. Material energy is always increasing and decreasing. So according to your particular type of body, you know, like some people say, well, things can't get worse. But they do, they get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. At some point they've reached an extremity, and then they have to start going the other way.
Well, I think what he meant is, when you go through the process of the hellish conditions, then you purify it again. Right?
Yeah.
Then you get, say, another next life is again a human.
Right? Yeah, you can even go to heaven. I mean, Prabhupada said a murderer, if he's hung, he goes to heaven. Hung. Then he can go to heaven because he's released himself of all his sins. You see? So, although people might be crying, oh, Johnny's getting hung, but actually he's getting a lot of benefit because he's now purified himself of this crime. So at the end of the hanging, he's actually then judged by the demi-devas as to what, you know, because he's sacrificed his life on the altar of punishment, so now he's allowed to have some new...
But what about someone who's murdered? Isn't that the same? I mean, he didn't want to die. Somebody came and murdered him.
Yeah, I mean, it's very complex how it all works. I mean, someone who's murdered, then generally speaking, he murdered someone else. That's why he's getting murdered. It may have been 20 million lifetimes, I don't know, but he did actually deserve to be murdered.
Well, the person was hanged, he had hanged somebody else?
Well, as I say, karma must be as complex as God. Because karma is really how God's creation works. So it must be unlimited. You know, it's like going to a court case. I mean, it takes like sometimes a whole year to work out who did it. You know, it's so complex. You know.
Does this, what you call bhakti, does it, when we say that when you know that your leg is going to be cut, it is going to be cut. Okay? It's going to be amputated, whether it's an accident. And if somebody knows, an individual knows, that, okay, I'm going to suffer like this, then why to pray to God? I am going to suffer. Does pious activities or bhakti, does it reduce the effect of that particular
incident? Yeah, but the thing is, bhakti has nothing to do with good or bad. Bhakti is the eternal function of the soul in its spiritual environment. Religion is to do with good and bad. You see, we do religious pious activities because we want to avoid having our leg chopped off, because we want to avoid becoming a victim. So a lot of times religion is also a type of morality, you know, like a social customs. You don't steal your neighbor's wife because you end up fighting with your neighbor. So what you do is you live nicely with your neighbor, you lend them a bit of sugar, you know, you lend them a bit of money or whatever, and you just try to be friends. Because it's not because you're pious religious people, it's because it's the best way to live. And if you go around stealing their furniture and stealing their wife and stealing their cat and their dog, you probably end up killing each other. So generally, so-called morality is just it's just another external coating of making the world nice. a good place. It's not to do with religion. It's just morality. So that's why a lot of so-called humanitarianists are actually sometimes much more better than religionists. You know, there's people who give their whole life to opening up sanctuaries for cats. You know, I mean, they dedicated their whole life to that. Now, not many religious people would do that. You know, who'd spend their whole life looking after cats? You know, but there are religious people who would go to church every Sunday and go to a temple every day and do all the pujas, but they probably haven't got a single interest in cats. You know, so it's all relative. You see, people's idea of doing good could be looking after cats. Another person's idea of doing good is helping orphan children or looking after the blind or, you know, opening schools and hospitals and giving people medical care. There's nothing religious about it. It's just being a nice guy is a good thing to do. And so that's why a lot of Westerners or even Easterners, they have a lot of trouble with this whole religious thing. You don't need it. Because the law of karma is good breeds good and bad breeds bad. So if you're just good, then where's the question of God? So even amongst religion, in most Indian religions, God doesn't exist. Arya Samaj, they do so many wonderful things. They're total atheists. You see? They're total atheists, but they do a lot of good. The Arya Samaj school, the Arya Samaj home for the blind, the Arya Samaj this, the Arya... But they are 100% atheists. You see? They don't believe in God. And they actually criticize deities. They say deity worship and all that, it's all a lot of rubbish. But they're very good. Their social altruism is very good. So that's why one has to be very careful to realize that this goodness is also a poison. Goodness is a poison, passion is a poison, and ignorance is a poison. They're all poison mentality. The only reason goodness is of a better quality is because it can lead one towards spirituality. Passion can't, and ignorance can't. You have to go to goodness to come to the next level, which is spirituality. So therefore, without goodness, there's no progress. Okay, then we finish there. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai.